Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey kids, you are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and this show is Fish Out of Agua with Michelle Carlo. Today is Tuesday, October 10th, 2017, and the world seems to be going to hell in a friggin' hot air balloon. Like, I can't believe every minute you turn around, like, someone else that dies, someone else is getting shot, someone else is somewhere else is on fire, somewhere else is blowing up, somewhere else is getting flooded. It's friggin' crazy. It's almost like too much to bear. But then sometimes you get reminded of the things that keep on keeping on, like the flower bush, a friggin' flower bush that I saw growing out of a crack in the building facade today. And it reminded me that the forces that keep on trucking are greater than the forces that destruct. Think on that as we continue with this song from Eddie Kendricks. And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. Yep, no matter what, keeping on is something that we've all got to do. That was Keep on Trucking Part 1 by Eddie Kendricks from his, who used to be with the Temptations, which was a giant, one of the most giant, revered, awesome R&B soul groups from out of Motown in the 60s and 70s. And Eddie Kendricks had a solo career also. And this song, Keep on Truckin' Part 1, was from his eponymous, that means named after him, vocabulary on Fish Out of Agua. Woohoo! His eponymous solo album that he released in 1973. Yeah. I know, another song from my well-spent youth. I can't help it. But this next song is current. Oh, yes, it's from someone else's well-spent youth. And it is from Childish Gambino, and it's called Redbone from 2017. Wow. See, I can play current music, all right? Thank you. That song was chosen by this week's featured guest artist. It was Redbone from the 2017 album Awaken My Love by Childish Gambino, who, under the name David Glover, is an actor, playwright, producer, director. Oh my God, how many hyphens? I got tired just reading that. But anyway, now it's time for our favorite part of the show. Woohoo! Everybody, welcome to Fish Out of Agra's Guest Artist of the Week. Woohoo! This is my favorite part of the show. My favorite part. All right, I know. You don't listen in to hear me sing. All right, now while I'm sticking my foot into my mouth all the way down to my fundillo, I am going to stop and introduce to you the handsome, accomplished, funny, and what superlative gentleman that is sitting here with me. Whoa. Vernon Payne.
I have never been called so superlative before. I can't even say that word. Hey, Michelle, how you doing? I am Vernon Payne.
Yes.
No, I appreciate it. This is awesome. I really do appreciate being on the show. I was listening to you and Leanne Lord.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Leanne.
Leanne, like, you know, before I even thought about doing comedy, like, I was just a comedy fan, so, like, growing up in Brooklyn, like, you know, you're just, especially around black people in a black neighborhood, you get turned on to comedy. But, like, most of comedy is just black comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much kind of all you see until you get old enough to reach out of that. I saw her on, I must have been, like, maybe, like, 13, 14, 15, and I saw her on BET.
Really?
Yeah, and I was like, this woman is so hilarious.
Don't say how long. That was, like, yesterday.
Yes.
She's gonna kill you.
And I saw her on BET, and I thought, like, she was smart, she was funny, and I was like, I didn't know that, like, black comedy can be that, you know? Because, like,
In what way?
Because,
do you,
like,
mean...
I didn't know black comedy can be smart and funny.
Okay, I was going to say that. I didn't want to put a word in your mouth.
Yeah,
I wanted you to say it.
Yeah. Because, like,
well, she's very smart.
Yeah, she's very smart.
Like, she's superlatively smart.
Yes. Or that I can't say. She is that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And it was her and a guy named Vince Morris that were, like, outside of what the typical black comedy is.
Mm.
And they both did it well on Def Jam.
Mm.
And I saw her in BET, too, and I was like... This woman's amazing, but I haven't seen her and heard from her in so many years. And then when I moved back to Brooklyn, I saw her and I was like, "That's her!"
Oh my God!
I was like, "I
oh my God!"
This is the only time when, like, I'm 32 now, right? The only time when, like, 32 years later in my life, I can see someone that I saw on TV and share the same stage with them. Like, that to me is
amazing.
Have
you performed with her?
Yes.
Ah, that's great. Yeah, she's an amazing lady. All right, so we're going to be backtracking a little bit. I want to get back into you moving back to Brooklyn and how you got into comedy and stuff later. But I always ask this to every single person that comes on the show, how the hell did we meet? We did a storytelling show in Times Square back in June.
Yes.
And you were sitting in front of me, and I was like, I know this. I'm like, look at the back of his. I know that head.
I know that head.
I know that head. I know the shape of that head. And wait, was it? There was this show in Williamsburg like 2 years ago or something, and Sean O'Brien was throwing out like not Twinkies, jerky into the audience.
Yeah, he was doing that. So it was at the Experiment Comedy Gallery.
Oh, right. Another spot.
The first one.
Yeah.
And so they were doing storytelling, and this is when I was like, just kind of started getting into storytelling. I did it once before.
So that was like 2015, maybe? 2016?
That was about 2015.
Okay.
And I saw you there, and I did my famous Hawaii story that everyone pretty much likes. And you're talking about, you know, the gentrification that happened around your area, and you lived in Park Slope and all that stuff. And I was like, if I need to use a big word, I was so enamored with you. I was like, wow. All right, because, like, it's a part that I didn't know, because, like, I didn't know about gentrification that much because my role was very small. So it wasn't until, like, I came back to Brooklyn and I was like, oh, why? why are there so many white people on the A train?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know snap. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I know. Like, I know. I know.
Like,
I know. I know.
Like, Notion Avenue wasn't the place to get off of at
right.
any time
no.
of day.
I know. I
and
know.
I saw
I know,
that.
I
and
know.
I was like, I saw a white person with a surfboard. I'm like, where the hell are you getting a goddamn surfboard?
Where are you surfing on Notion Avenue?
Yeah.
No, that, wait, Notion on the A, that's not East New York, though. That's like Bed-Stuy, right?
Yes.
It's not Bed-Stuy. Yeah, East New York would be further east. Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, I did that. That piece is called, it's part of a larger mm-hmm. piece called There Goes the Neighborhood, which is basically specifically about the gentrification of Park Slope / mm-hmm. Windsor Terrace, mm-hmm. Brooklyn, where you say you're 32, I moved to that neighborhood when you was turning two. Okay? So, and I seen it change and change again. My joke was always, when I first moved to that neighborhood, it was full of Puerto Ricans. Now I feel like I'm one of the few left, which is not, there are a bunch of homeowners that yeah. are still there, when I had to move, I realized that I was the gentrifier, even though I'm the same ethnicity mm-hmm. as the people that were being pushed out, because I went in there as an artist. I didn't go there as a fellow homie,
yeah,
for want of
yeah,
a better word.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I went
understand.
There as an educated, you know, I'm going to be an artist and I'm living here because the rent is cheap, you know?
I started doing, I'm trying to do this bit now, but like the whole idea of the bit is like, you can blame someone else about whatever, but you have to like spin it around too and see what you're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you see what you're doing, you can still be angry, but you still understand where the other person's coming from,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's exactly what you're just like, oh, shit, I'm doing the same yeah. thing in a way.
And
you
I
know?
Didn't know. How
yeah.
did I know? I'm
yeah.
25 years
yeah.
old. I'm out
you
of school.
Know.
But the thing that you were saying about the A train is, yes, that train was like the rough-ass train. I'm
yeah.
sorry.
That line was just the line, but like also when you just leave the line, like I was like hooking up with this like girl or whatever, and she lives off the Notion line, and like it's 1-2 o'clock in the morning, but I didn't realize where she lived.
Oh, this, is this recently?
Yeah, I would say fairly recent.
Okay.
And but like I still have memory of years ago, not now, but I mean like it's still messed up now, but it's not as bad as it was back in the day. But like I still have that PTSD from like, you know, 25 years ago, where like you shouldn't be walking around at 2 o'clock in the morning back home, where the train comes, every 15 minutes?
Right.
Anything can happen. Walk on the street at 2 o'clock in the morning, people just pop off.
Yes. You don't know when
yeah.
it's going to happen. All right, so let's backtrack for the 25 years ago. So where are you from?
So,
obviously, you're from New York.
Yeah, I'm from...
Obviously.
I'm from
Brooklyn.
I'm from Brooklyn, New York.
Was Notion your stop?
No. So I kind of grew up all over the place. I grew up mostly in the pink houses.
Okay.
East New York.
Yes, yes. Those notorious houses.
Those notorious houses where things happen.
Yes.
And then I grew up in Bed-Stuy. And then
How old were you when you moved out of pink?
Let's see. I think I was maybe about 3 or 4, but like... Yeah, about 3 or 4 or 5.
Good, then you don't remember much. No.
But my grandma still lived there.
Oh, no.
So I always go back.
Okay, yeah.
You know? So, like, pretty much my grandma raised me, so I'm always there. My mom was there, too. So, like, after my mom was like, I'm leaving my grandma's house, we moved to Bed-Stuy and then Brownsville. And so we kind of picked up all over. Then we moved to Borough Park.
Oh,
you know? So like that was a big
Whoa.
Jump.
Oh my God, that's like moving the planet, Claire.
Yeah.
Well, how old were you moved to
I just
Park?
Got into junior high school, so that must have
okay.
been like what 12.
So we're gonna explain because we have some listeners that are not from the United States.
Yeah.
So we're gonna explain the difference between Bed-Stuy and Borough Park. Go. And it's not just that one train
yeah.
is the A train or the
yeah.
G train, and the other train is the F train. F train, right? F or Q?
It's still the A train.
Oh, still the A train?
Yeah.
Borough Park is the A train?
No, I'm sorry. Borough Park is the D train.
Oh, the D train. Okay.
Yeah, it's the D train.
The D for delay.
Yes, which still happens.
Yeah.
So Bed-Stuy was an area that it was mostly predominantly black area, and it was very dilapidated.
But there was some great architecture
there
with the beautiful
yeah.
brownstones.
Yeah, there was. I forgot about the brownstones. Yes, there was amazing brownstones there. And I mean, it was a bad area, but like you raise up fast.
Hey.
And then Borough Park, which I didn't know at the time, is extremely Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was there, it was very Hispanic. But like, so there was Puerto Ricans there. There was Ecuadorians there. I didn't even know what Ecuadorian was.
Oh my God!
You know, there were Ecuadorians there. There were Dominicans there. I didn't know much about Dominicans. I just, you know, like most people just know Puerto Ricans. You know, that's pretty much what.
Yeah, yeah, and then you put them under the blanket label of Spanish,
yeah.
And it's like no, yeah. Don't do that.
But like you can tell that it's mostly like family, working class, you know, garages. Very well off.
People that want their kids to do better than they did.
Yes, you know, even though not every kid around that area did that.
Well, not like, every kid does that even when the kid got when the family got money.
Yeah, so, but yeah, it was amazing seeing the dynamic of both areas. I would stay, I would live in Borough Park, and I would travel on the 35 bus all the way to...
The B-35.
B-35.
Crosstown.
Yeah. All the way to right, like, where Brookdale Hospital it is.
Okay.
And then taking the next, I think, the 20, B-20, all the way into the pink houses.
Wow.
And you would just see, like...
That's a long-ass ride.
It's about, an hour, 15 minutes.
Yeah, it was going to be, like, an hour and a half.
Yeah. And it was crazy, but, like, you see that change of, like... She's like, what the fuck?
Why don't we get one of those red tour buses and, like, hijack it and drive the tourists and take it on that exact same route?
No,
I wish it was, like, a transporter like they have on Star Trek, and we could just commandeer. Of course, nothing's ever going to happen to us. So we'll just, like, hijack the... I'll distract them because I don't know how to drive. You know how to drive?
I know how to drive,
okay, good.
Yeah.
I'll distract them. Yeah. I'll go... Arr! You drive it, and then we'll go, poof, and then we'll just be on the B-35 to the B-20.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
And then you take, like, a microphone and say, and this is the pink... Oh, my God.
It was crazy, man. And but I loved it, you know? It was... all that stuff kind of made me who I am.
So when you were a kid, did you think about being a performer? Did you, like, want to be an artist?
So when I was a kid... music is in my family.
Oh yeah.
My grandfather used to be like in one of those 50s or 40s doo-wop bands.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one?
They're called the Dan Lears. They had like one. They're like a one-hit wonder.
Hey, you know what? Better than no hit.
Yeah. You know, they're a one-hit wonder. Then a bunch
Dan
of,
Lears.
Dan Lears. Yeah.
DanLears.
Yes.
I'm gonna look them up.
Yeah. They had the one song. I think One Summer's Night or something like that. And it's a good song.
I bet it is.
So
some of that music was pretty good.
My uncle is a music producer, and like, I was around, like, just him in his apartment blasting beats all throughout the night. Neighbors getting upset. Like he was on a video music box when that was fun.
Wow.
When I was around. So music always been in my family. And so like when I was younger, I was like kind of a singer, like an R&B singer.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, but
you got that kind of face.
I had it.
You got that suave face.
But then my balls dropped, so like, you know, that voice wasn't there anymore.
Andy,
and I went to rapping, you know. I started doing rap, and it's a picture of me when I was a kid, just holding, standing on the chair with a microphone in my hand. So ever since I was young, I've always had a microphone in my hand.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah. So then I went from there.
Not a hairbrush like other
no,
dumb
not,
kids.
Not, not, a hairbrush,
not a pen.
No.
Wow.
My mom got me one of those things that had like it was a microphone attached to like a radio thing, but a kid's version of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
You
I know.
You remember those,
yeah.
Right?
So yes, like, I remember those.
So I had those,
had
and I think I had two of those, and it was awesome. And I just do my little raps inside the thing or whatever, because that's what I was used to, and it was fun. I didn't realize until later like that's. That's my trajectory of being like a front person.
Right.
You know? And so I went from there, and then after rapping didn't go so well because I wasn't a good rapper at all. But then, I mean, I got into it like later on, maybe like 5 years ago, got back into it, and it was like mediocre. If I put more work into it, I'd probably be pretty decent. But so after that, I was like, I don't know what to do. And then I got into like hardcore metal music.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Like what kind?
Like Madball, Metallica, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Sick of It All, like stuff like that.
Like death metal?
Yeah, like
when they say.
Yes, exactly. That's what I did.
You sang like that?
That's what I did, yeah. I did like lows, I did some highs.
Oh, let's give it to that. You gotta
I don't know if I can do anymore.
Just pretend. What you say? Ooh, that sounds like a viper.
My voice is messed up. I used to do that stuff, you know. I went from like that extreme,
wow,
you know, to rapping to metal music. I did that for a couple of years. We almost got signed, and things got messed up. We broke up. And then after that, I was like, "Yo, what am I going to do?" Because like, I like being in front of people.
And how old are you by now?
Right now, was, when I started doing metal, I was like 23, oh, okay. 25, so, somewhere right. around there.
So like eight, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then from there, then we broke up around 2009, I think, 2008, okay. 2009. Maybe 2008, and then I was trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, because if the music's not happening, what else are you going
to
do?
There's nothing else to do. And I used to work with a guy who was funny, and he would always tell me jokes, but they wouldn't be his jokes. They'd be someone else's joke, but I'm very gullible as a person. You can tell me someone else's joke, and I'll just be, like, laughing at it. And then you tell me who it is. I'm like, oh, that's funny. So he told me who it is. And then one day I was like, maybe I should do comedy. Like, I've always been funny as a kid, or just stupid funny, and I'm still stupid funny. And it came like randomly. I was like, oh shit, maybe I should try comedy. And then I did that, and for many years I sucked.
Yeah.
For many years you sucked.
Wow. Well, I can relate.
Yeah. Like, I sucked for a very long time, and one time I didn't suck was doing a roast.
Oh wow.
So there's a guy up in Albany whose name I won't.
Oh speak. Wait, how did you get up to Albany?
Oh, so my mom wanted a better life for us, and I was like, I don't want this, because my life was here, my friends were here, and then I had a girlfriend who I messed up with, so like I'm trying to, like, you know, fix things, whatever. And she was like, you know, we're moving up here, a better life, and I'm like, this is stupid.
What are you, like 20?
I was like 17.
Oh wow, were still in high school.
I was like my last year of high school. I moved up to Albany, New York. This is like maybe 2 months after September 11th.
Oh.
Yeah, but it wasn't because of that. It's just because she wanted.
Right.
You know?
Like, yeah. But still, that's just significant because of what happened on that day.
So.
So did you graduate high school here, or did you finish it there?
I graduated high school at my last year up in Albany.
Wow.
Up in Troy, New York, rather.
Wow.
Which is like 15 minutes away from Albany.
Did you go to college up there?
No, I didn't go. I didn't go to college because I wanted to be a performer.
Oh, okay, right on.
Which is, I mean, now in retrospect, I'm like, oh, that's stupid, because I could have got, like, now you need a degree to, like, answer phones for some fucking reason.
I know.
But I was like, after high school is over, I want to be a performer, I want to be a musician, that's what I wanted to do. And I was like, I remember the guy's counselor came down, and he was like, hey, so you haven't done anything for college? I'm like, I'm not going to college. I'm going to be a rock star.
Oh, my God.
You know? And here I am, you know, years later, just a comedian. Not a rock star as much as I wanted to be.
But you went for it, and you had talent, and you almost made it. You could have made it.
I could have made it.
You know, and now there's just other things you're going to make.
So
what brought you back to New York?
Comedy. I was like...
Okay. So you lived there from when you were 17. So you did all your music up there?
I did all my music up there. I started comedy.
Yeah.
It was about, I would say, I'm 32 now, so I moved back here when I was 28.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I moved back here when I was 29.
5 years ago.
Or, no, actually, you know what? Less than that. I moved back here in 2013, so.
4 years ago.
Yeah, about 4 years ago.
So wow.
I must have been 29. I think I was 29.
Yeah.
And I was in Albany, and I was, like, getting up and down about comedy. And then I was dating this girl, and I was just getting very serious about it. I was, like, listening to comedians that I like and trying to find the voice that's
like
for
who?
Me. Patrice O'Neill, George Carlin.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
The greats.
Louis Black. You know. Like, Chappelle wasn't even in my mind as a comic. Like, I liked him for what he was. But, like, I didn't get into Chappelle as a comedian, like, way later. Like, maybe, like, 2 years later.
So all the music and all the open mics you did when you first started comedy was all in Albany.
All up in Albany.
Because I was like, it sounded like you were doing it here.
No, like every entertainment thing that actually went on stage for people and did in front of people, it was all upstage.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you came to New York, you had to basically start over again.
I had to start over again, and that's the hard thing to do.
How did you do that? You did it.
Yeah,
but, like,
I did it. I don't know. It's just a determination. You know, friends, you know, like I took my 401k that I had from my pretty decent job that I had, and I was like, all right, I got this much money.
You had a 401k?
I had a 401k.
Honey, I didn't get that until I was more grown. Oh, my God. So you have a good head on your shoulders.
You know, I got lucky. I got a friend who had she's working somewhere. She helped me out, and then I got it, and I got the job, and then they sent me over to 401k, and I didn't realize, like, over time and years or whatever, they put money in, you put money in, they match it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you get so much money. And I'm like, oh, shit, all right, I got this money. I got this money. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to move to New York. I'm going to, like, I'm going to follow my dream. And that's exactly what I did. I was like, you know what? I got this money right now. I might as well follow my dream. And I took it.
That's amazing because a lot of people, I think, wouldn't have the balls to do that.
Yeah.
They would just like stay.
Yeah.
You know, they would settle for where they were and think that, well, I tried. This is as far as I could get in life. But you said, nah, that's good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's so cool.
Failure was not an option.
That's so cool.
So
where was the first place that you did stand up here? In New York.
First place to stand up here in New York.
And where did you move to when you came back here?
I moved to Bensonhurst, Brooklyn.
Okay.
Yeah. So my school was in Bensonhurst. My high school was in Bensonhurst, so I know the area.
Mm.
So I felt comfortable. Like, listen, I'm from the hood. And, you know, I'm from the projects and all that stuff. I know how it works. I don't want to go back there.
But that neighborhood also changed from when you had left when you were a kid.
Yeah, it got worse,
Italian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but Bensonhurst. Yeah, Bensonhurst. Yeah,
it was really Italian. Yeah. It was like stereotypically Italian.
Yeah, it was very
Italian. Like, totally stereotypically Italian. Too stereotypically Italian, like, in a bad way.
Yeah.
I mean, the stereotype was bad, not the Italian. Yeah, that's what I meant. And it became very Russian and very Chinese.
Yeah, it came extremely Chinese. Same thing, too. Like, I would visit here, you know, whenever I was still living in Albany, I would visit here, and I'm like, why are there so many Asian people on the train? Not in a bad way. I'm just realizing, like, these people, like, they're coming in, so, like, they're changing that dynamic of the neighborhood.
Because that's what happens with New York. It's like, it's just like this ebb and this flow and stuff. But what's happening now is, like, I've heard people call it hyper-gentrification, where stuff is, like, planned and manufactured instead of it being the natural progression of
Probably
because
money
city.
Is, like, the most determining factor or anything.
So I want to know, what was the, who, like, who did you meet, and, like, where were the first places where you performed? And
all right. So there was like.
And did you see Leanne Lord? No.
maybe 2 years later or a year later. So there was, I did this thing called 10 by 10 Festival in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. I think I've heard of that.
Yeah. One guy that I used to be cool with, he ran it. And so I met two comics from New York City, my buddy Mike Lemmy and a dude named James Goff. And I met them there, and I was like, and I always talked to James for, like, for advice. So I decided to move down to the city, and then, like, I was, like, talking to him for advice. And I moved down there, talked to my friend Mike Lemmy, and he had a show. So he was like, all right, man, do you want to host a show? And I was like, you goddamn right I want to host a show. And then I hosted a show, and I was like, and I sucked. Like, I hate hosting. I fucking hate it.
Really?
I'm mediocre at it.
Just good enough?
Yeah. Don't you hate when, like, you hate something, but you're just good enough to do it?
And yeah.
Just, God damn it, you know?
Yeah,
and everyone's like, hey, do you want to host? I'm like, but hosting pays you a lot more money than actually doing a spot, you know? So I was like, yeah, fuck it, I'll host, you know?
I was a burlesque host for a number of years. I was the only... I would do some shows where I was the only person that was guaranteed to be paid. And and basically my it was like, well, I'm wearing the most amount of clothes you're going to see all night. Welcome to the stage. Yeah. Boom, Clams Casino. Yeah. And, you know, whatever.
And it was fun. I mean, it was cool thing. Like, it's cool to learn how to, like, talk to people on the cuff sometimes without actually having to go in material or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing to learn.
You really hone your improv skills when you host, and you really learn how to shut down hecklers. And you learn how to read a room, and you learn how to adjust if, like, what you're saying. I mean, like, I guess it's like doing stand-up in a way, although even though you're just being a facilitator and you're just doing, like, interstitials. Yeah.
One thing to learn, it's one thing you learn. You learn about from hosting, because I used to host my own show too. My own show was like, I'm gonna do my show. What I want to do is, like, I'm gonna get performers that I know are good, and did it get a performer who is, like, not so good, just starting, to give them a chance, because no one gives you a chance, you know.
Yeah, that's so. This is true.
So if no one gives you a chance, when you get the time to when you get on, then you give someone else a chance who may not get a chance. Like, that's how I always thought comedy should be.
And that's how you get better.
Yeah.
It's like, if you want to like run, you got to train with someone who's like a minute faster than you.
You know, and that's what I believe. So I did that. So, like, you know, learning how to host was pretty good. You know, I mean, I still have more stuff to learn, but it was fun. So I hosted that show, didn't do well as a host. I forgot one of the guy's names who I'm actually cool with today. And it was a fun time. Like I felt bad because like I just whatever, but that's when I realized like I really, my jokes were not New York City good.
Oh, okay.
They were
like explain what that is.
Good. So like New York City good is like one of those things where like there are ways. New York City has like a specific type of comedy that works for New York City, and they get it and they understand it. It can be anything stupid, any stupid movie reference. It can't be. It has to be like smart and witty enough for people to be like, yeah, I fucks with you, you know. And in Albany, that comedy wasn't there. It was just like, hey, well, here's about the day, you know. It was just very silly stuff, but my voice wasn't there yet. I was just talking about random stuff because I didn't know how to like live a life talk about it.
And you didn't have a point of view.
I didn't have a point of view. You know?
And that's the thing that separates someone from being mediocre to being good.
Yeah.
And from being good to being great is that you develop your unique point of view.
And New York City did that for me. My buddy from Albany, he moved down here like 2 years after I did. And he was like, oh shit, you got good. And I'm like, yeah, because the city was like, put up or shut up. And I'm like, I had to do one or the other. And you just learn how to get better, and you learn, all right, you know what, that joke is no good, or it's not good for now. At some point when I get good enough, I'll come back to it and see what I can do with it, but I'm gonna have to get better at not being afraid to talk to people. I gotta get better at slowing down sometimes, but sometimes I still have a problem with, you know, I gotta get better at like connecting with people. In New York City, like it puts you through the trenches.
Did you find that storytelling got you better at that, especially the connecting with people? Because I really want to know how you got into storytelling.
Storytelling.
Because it's such a different world than stand-up.
Yeah. What storytelling did for me was I couldn't make work in stand-up.
Mm.
Work as a part of a thing that actually has a backstory to it, has like a backing to it.
Right,
know?
because stand-up is just a setup and a punchline.
Yeah, set up punchline, this and that.
And storytelling is getting into the nut grab, the meat of the thing, and like getting, like finding the humor in that.
Well, storytelling there for me was like, and helped me in stand-up a little bit, I think, is helped me get the heart of a person. So I always like the moments where like I'm telling you something and you are just like into what I'm saying, but then when the joke comes, it just kind of goes out your mind because that thing is there. But like for that second where you're just like,
right,
that shit I like.
Yeah, and you're like, what? Yeah. That came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So how did you get into storytelling?
So the first storytelling thing I did was in Albany, actually. They had a storytelling show.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was like an open mic, rather. And there was a bit that I wanted to do about a girl that I had hooked up with that at the time I thought may have been a man. So, but I didn't know how to like talk about it really. So, I don't write anything down. The first time you hear it is the first time I hear it. Is the first time you hear it.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So what I did was I just went up there and just told the story like I'm talking to you. So as I'm talking to you, all these things are coming in my mind and like jokes starting to work as I'm telling the story and people are into it and people are like, oh, that was a great story at the end. I'm like, oh shit. I just wrote this fucking thing in my mind about what happened and it got emotion and it got laughter. Now, how can I apply that to stand up? It never worked for stand up.
Right. Well, it's like comparing a mango with
a watermelon. We got this, yeah. You know?
We just did the stereotypical fruit for both our ethnic groups. Oh my God. Yeah. You know? What storytelling were you doing here? Like, who were you getting, meeting and stuff?
So, for storytelling here, I think the first time I really, when did I get into storytelling here? I think it might have been at the experiment.
Oh, okay. So you haven't done the moth or anything like
no,
that?
No, I haven't done the moth. Like, I went there once to tell my teenage love story that I did, but I didn't get picked.
Yeah, and you have to keep going. You got to keep going. Yeah, you got to keep at it.
And, but I think it was just at the open mic. So I was like, all right, I have things that.
So was it Morgan Pielli's show? That's the show that we were at.
Yes, it was, I think it was Morgan Pielli.
It was totally Morgan Pielli show.
I'm like, all right, I have this thing.
And it was in February. Yeah. I remember it was because it was cold.
Because I remember, like, when I had the Hawaii incident, mm-hmm. that, like, I had this whole, like, as soon as I left that girl and on a plane back to Brooklyn from Hawaii, I had this whole thing in my mind of how I wanted to tell it. But it took me a year and a half to figure it out and to write it in a blog form and write it with my mind or like how I think jokes will go. It took me even longer to like perform it. So I think it was there when like I was like, all right, here's the story. Let me see what I can do with it and see if it like does everything I need to do it. If it makes you be like, what the fuck? Or like, oh my God. And like, get the hell out of here. Like, that, like, that was the whole, was everything that I wanted. And it did that. So I just keep on doing that. And I realize, oh, shit, I have, you know, the King Xerxes story. And then after that, I'm like, oh, shit, I think I have a knack for storytelling.
So you were getting responses from stories that sometimes you weren't getting from stand-up.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, so now I can separate the two. Now I can be both.
Because there are a lot of stand-ups who think they can tell stories, but they cannot. Yeah. One person who's a stand-up that is a master of that is Gastor Almonte, who is from East New York. Dominican dude from East New York, tall dude, big dude, and he's just amazing. Like, it's not stand-up, it's a story, it's just, but you are laughing. Like you're burning calories laughing. All right, you listen to one of Gastor's stories, and it's like you don't have to go to the gym. Like, you worked out because you got your cardio from laughing so much.
I saw him on the television show, This Is Not Happening.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, because I heard about it. Like, I heard, like, he used to take a storytelling class, and then he just been helped along the way, and then he learned how to do storytelling really well.
Yeah.
And then he got that show. I'm like, that's fucking awesome. You know, that means that your hard work paid off. Yeah.
He took a class. I think he took Jeff Zimmerman's class.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So, you know, I know a lot of people have to go to the next level. They've taken the class to, like, get their instinct, you know, like honed for want of a better, like, no one can teach you how to be funny.
No one can teach you how to be
funny. No one can teach you timing, but people can teach you like structure and stuff like that.
Structure is a big one. Yeah. The funny thing is, like, I never took classes for anything. Oh. I was just like, it's like one of the things, like,
well, storytelling teachers here, you reach out to Vernon. He might be ready.
Yeah, please. You know.
Oh, and at that note, why don't you give us a little snippet of a story?
Oh, sure. So this is a longer story, but I'll give you like a little bit.
So it's like a snippet, an excerpt.
Yeah, I'll give you a snippet of the
story. Okay, does the story have a name?
The story is called Teenage Love.
Teenage Love, okay.
All right. So it was 2001 and I was 16 years old. I was a 16-year-old goth kid. I wore like the black fingernail polish and like the makeup and everything. Like, yeah, I even wore JNCO jeans. You remember JNCO jeans? Like, JNCO jeans are the type of jeans that you wear when you want to be a vampire and a douchebag at the same time, you know? That's kind of pretty much how it is. There was a girl who I had like this big crush on, and she kind of reminded me of like a mix between Sophia Loren and the goth chick from NCIS, you know, like that. Like, she really got to me. But she also had the attitude of Marissa Tomei, and something. And she's this Italian girl from Brooklyn, and like, oh my gosh, she was just amazing, you know. And her name was Amy, and I really had a crush on her. And for like 6 months, we were going back and forth of like sending notes back and forth together. And on the last day of school, July 13th, I believe, I asked her to be my girlfriend, and she said yes. And I was like, I was ecstatic. I was like, yes, like I finally got the girl that I wanted, you know? And for pretty much most of that summer, we were inseparable. We were spent together, time together every day. She was amazing because she brought me into things that I never thought I would be into, like Friends. Like, Friends is an amazing television show for me, but not many black people say that. I'm about like one in five black people who like love Friends, you know? And And we were always like, who are we? Like, are we a Ross? Are we a Rachel? And for me, like, we were Ross and Rachel, in a way, you know? So it was, our relationship grew, and it was great. And then I remember feeling that, like, I was in love with her, but I didn't know how to tell her. And I remember one day back from this, the swimming pool, I think it was maybe in Harlem or the Bronx, I don't remember, it was like so many years ago. And I was sitting on the chair at the corner, she was on the other side, and I was afraid to look at her. And she looked at me and she was like, what's wrong? And I was like, I think I love you. And there's like just a lull there. And she looks at me and she was like, Vernon, I love you too. And I was like, yes. Like, I'm like, yeah, she loves me. Amazing. Like, this is the best time of my life. Like, I would, like, if anyone jumped up from the train and was like, I'm going to shoot anyone who's in love right now. Like, take me as tribute. Like, that's how much I love this fucking person. And our relationship just blossomed right after that. There was a friend of mine who lived right around the corner who I had no, like, attraction to, but she was just cool. But this one day, it was very different. I went to her sister's birthday party, and this girl, like, she had glasses. She wore glasses, big, thick-framed glasses that I used to wear back in the day, like, messed up curly hair, and, like, kind of dressed down. But this day, it was different. She had contacts in. I can see her face. She was amazingly beautiful. Her hair was straight. And I remember thinking, oh, shit, I think I like this girl. But how can I like her? I have a girlfriend. This should not happen. And I'm trying to get rid of it, and it just doesn't happen. So I told my girlfriend, I'm not sure if I love you anymore because of her. And then we break up. Then my mom is like, hey, we're moving to Albany. So we moved to Albany, and I never get a chance to actually get back with her. 12 years later, when I moved back here, randomly we meet up on the street, we change numbers, and then we started dating again. And it was the best time of my life. I'm like, I fall in love with you again. But then it didn't work out. She was like, I don't feel the same way for you as you feel for me. And it sucked. But at least I got a chance to know what it was like to be 16 again. And be in love.
Whoa, that's not a lot of people get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were lucky.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so bittersweet. Yeah. Oh, Vernon, that's so bittersweet. Well, tell us what. And if people want to catch up with you, where can they look you up?
You can see me at VernonPaincomic.com. You can check me out there. Check me out on my Twitter, cool_ass_Vern.
Cool ass Vern.
Cool ass Vern. That is everywhere. All right. Instagram.
All right. I'll give you that.
Cool ass Vern, babe. Yeah.
All right. And what's your thing on Instagram? What's your handle there?
Same thing. Cool ass Vern.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's right. Continuity. Yeah. Continuity. All right. So one last question.
Yes.
If you had any advice to give to the child in the top floor tenement walk up or living in the attic bedroom or the person that's been uprooted from where they live and now has to live someplace else and has a burning desire to be an artist and doesn't know how the hell they're going to get out of the house and do it, what would you tell them?
I would tell them, follow your dreams, man. Just take it. Even if you do fail, just get up and get back up. Just take your heart and just throw it away. Just throw it at something that you really love, and it'll come back to you.
Take your heart and throw it away.
Take your heart and throw it away.
Yeah. And maybe you'll get it back.
Yeah.
All right, that sounds good. All right, thank you so much for being on the show,
Vernon.
Thank
you very much, I appreciate it.
Woo! Hug in the air.
Hug. Yeah. crit in 2015. Once I finish this, witnesses will convey just what I mean. Been feeling this way since I was 16. Came to my senses. You never liked this anyway. Your friendship, I meant it. I'm African American. I'm African. I'm black as the moon. Heritage of a small village. Part of my residence. Came from the bottom of mankind. My hair is nappy. My is big, my nose is round and wide. You hate me, don't you? You hate my people. Your plan is to terminate my culture. You're f***ing evil. I want you to recognize that I'm a proud monkey. You vandalize my perception, but can't take down from it. And this is more than confession. I mean, I might press the button just so you know my discretion. I'm guarding my feelings. I know that you feel it. You sabotage my community, making a killing. You made me a killer. Emancipation of a real.
I saw them treat me like a slave, can be black. Boy, me feel one heap of pain, can be black. I man, I saw them put me in a chain, can be black. I'm a chain now, me gold chain full of rocks. And you know, see the whip, left scar from me back. But now we have a big whip back from the black. All them I see we doom from the start, can be black. But remember this, every race start from the black. Just remember that.
I'm the biggest hypocrite in 2015. Once I finish this, witnesses will convey just what I mean. I mean, it's evident that I'm irrelevant to society. That's what you're telling me. Penitentiary would only hire me. Curse me till I'm dead. Church me with your fake prophesizing that I'ma be just another slave in my head. Institutionalized manipulation and lies. Reciprocation of freedom only live in your eyes. You hate me, don't you? I know you hate me just as much as you hate yourself. Jealous of my wisdom and cards I dealt. Watching me as I pull up, fill up my tank, then pill out. Muscle cars like pull-ups, show you a 15 mil bout. Black and successful, this black man meant to be special. Cat scans on my radar, bitch, how can I help you? How can I tell you I'm making a killing? You made me a killer, emancipation of a real nigga.
The black of the belly, the sweet bitches. 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 The black of the belly, the black of the belly. I saw them treat me like a slave, call me black. Boy, me feel my leap of pain, call me black. I'm an asset of put me in a chain, call me black. I'm a chain now, me gold chain full of rocks. And you know, see the whip, left scar from me back. But now we have a big whip back from the black. All them are so redoomed from the start, call me black. But remember this, every race start from the black. Just remember that.
I'm the biggest hypocrite in 2015. When I finish this, if you listen, then sure you will agree. This plot is bigger than me. It's generational hatred. It's cynicism. It's grimy little justification. I'm African American. I'm African. I'm black as the heart of a f***ing Aryan. I'm black as the name of Tyrone and Darius. Excuse my French, but f*** you, no f*** y'all. That's as blunt as it gets. I know you hate me, don't you? You hate my people. I can tell cause there's threats when I see you. I can tell cause your waist is evil. No, I can tell because you in love with the desert eagle. Thinking maliciously, he get a chain, then you gon' bleed him. It's funny how Zulu and Xhosa might go to war. Two tribal armies that wanna build and destroy. Remind me of these Compton Crip gangs that live next door. Beefing with Pyrus, only death settled the score. So no matter how much I say I like to preach with the Panthers, or tell Georgia State Marcus Garvey got all the answers, or try to celebrate February like it's my B-Day, or eat watermelon chicken and Kool-Aid on weekdays, or jump high enough to get Michael Jordan endorsements, or watch BET cause urban support is important. So why did I weep when Trayvon Martin was in the street? When gangbanging make me kill a nigga blacker than me. Hypocrite.
And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. That was another song chosen by Vernon Payne, Kendrick Lamar, and The Black of the Berry from his 2015 album To Pimp a Butterfly. And guess what, kids? That's our show. If you like what you've heard on Radio Free Brooklyn, whether it's Fish Out of Agua or any other of the fine shows on Radio Free Brooklyn this season and our next season, which starts in the middle of November, you can sponsor us. Yes, all you have to do is go to the Radio Free Brooklyn homepage and there's a little tab that says donate. Pick that from the drop-down menu and donate, 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 donate. Sponsor living artists because that is cool. I also want to shout out the Radio Free Brooklyn Halloween show, which will be on Monday night, Monday, October 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m., hosted by Radio Free Brooklyner Maddie Rosalier at the wonderful Footlight Performance Space and Bar in beautiful downtown Ridgewood. Check that out, too. And yeah, like I said, that's our show. We opened this week's show with an old school song, and we're going to close with one. I got the idea to look up the doo-wop group that Vernon's uncle was in called the Dan Lears. And what I found was pretty friggin' impressive. They were one of the many street corner doo-wop groups that proliferated around New York City in the late 1950s. The Dan Lears consisted of Jimmy Weston, Johnny Lee, Willie Ephraim, Nat McCoon, and Roosevelt Mays, they were the singers, and they were definitely a one-hit wonder, a pretty damn recognizable one-hit wonder. One of the biggest songs of the year it came out, 1958, and it was called One Summer Night. Wow. Vernon, shouting out your uncle, I don't know which one is he, but yes, we're going to play this song because we have to. Oh my God. Listen, one hit is better than no hits, right? I love when freaky deaky things like this happen. So from old school to new school to your school, stay tuned for Brooklyn Bandstand next. Don't forget to go to Footlights for the RFB party on Monday, October 23rd. And we'll see you kids next week. Woohoo!